Hey, thanks for tuning into the Teen Reign Supreme podcast show. I'm Sife, and we're here with San Francisco's dopest crews, STP, man. What's up, guys?
Yo. What's up, Sife?
What's good, man? How's everything?
Good, what's good? Thanks for having us, man.
Right on, right on.
Yes, thanks so much.
So, let's get into it, man. STP, what does that stand for?
Go for it, yo. Tell them. Many things. Supper time psychos. Go ahead, Dan. Go ahead, Don. All right, so originally, since this guy, memory got stuck somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Originally, STP stood for Scaring Toys Petrol.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And then cool.
That was the original.
So, and then we're seeing.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that they had a lot of crews out there that had some kind of dope names, and like they had K-Sun, Can't Stop Us Now, stuff like that. I don't know what SOTA stand for.
SOTA stood for State of the Art. Yeah.
Oh, State of the Art. Yeah. Okay, cool. Cool, man. Freaking
yeah. I was up in that. I was up in that crew once upon a time.
Oh, okay. You guys were affiliates.
Word.
I know Man 45 was. I mean, at the end of the day, I think like a lot of those writers from the Sunset was coming around and mixing in with the writers from the Mission.
Word. Yeah. Word.
Yeah. What neighborhood did you guys come from?
I actually came originally from fucking North Beach.
Uh-huh.
Around that area, and then my family moved out here to the Sunset District when I was really super young. You know what I mean? Grandparents bought the first house out here. Originally, my family, not me, but my family originally, Bay Street Projects and that stuff, man. Word up.
Okay.
That's where they're from.
Cool.
I'm originally from Park Merced, which is kind of an extension of Sunset, mm-hmm. and kind of leads into Lakeview a little bit. And for all those who are not really familiar with geography in San Francisco, Park Merced it circles the Lake Merced, and then like maybe roughly a mile away from Daly City.
Okay, yeah. So you guys kind of on the border.
Well, Shock, he's more inner Sunset, outer Sunset, closer to Daly City. So,
okay.
But yeah, definitely Sunset heads for sure. I never really looked at it like that, but initially when we all kind of started, I think the same goes for Shock. I can't really, speak to, his early on rap days, but all the heads I knew pretty much were in my neighborhood and then at school. Because I went to school in Daly City as well.
Oh, okay.
Our university. And so that was kind of my, like, and I didn't really have too much, I didn't really come across many writers outside of my immediate realm. It wasn't until I got to high school that I started really meeting the writers who had the in or the inside track. My early beginnings were definitely in Park Merced, and just kind of like, it's a very quiet community. And if anyone has driven through Park Merced, it's got a very quiet vibe. There's not really anyone out walking around, and you can kind of, like, if you're kind of a graffiti writer or a tagger, you can pull off a couple of tags on a mailbox, or maybe if you're riding through the laundromats, you can get off a quick tag with a Magnum marker or something. But I didn't get my early start until I started seeing kind of a couple of tags start really appearing inside the shed. And neighborhood kids, most likely yes. But I never came across them. I never knew them, except for like I had a couple of friends. But they kind of very they're dancers, kind of graffiti writers, but never really took it super serious. But anyways, that was somewhat my beginnings.
Oh, okay, cool. And Don, you started writing what?
Oh man, started writing probably like late '83, early '84. somewhere around that time, man. And it was just like with a bunch of neighborhood homies. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't really nothing serious. It was just all part of like, just all part of hip hop. You feel me? Like, cats started dancing and shit. Cats started out as breakers. You know what I mean? And then hip hop culture eventually brought us back around to graffiti. You know what I mean? Like that caught our attention. We started writing. We started tagging on shit. You know what I mean? But man, early beginnings was a trip because the first time I ever got exposed to graffiti, I don't know if you want to know this or not, but I'll tell you if you want to know. But the first time I was ever exposed to graffiti, I was just a little, and this is way like years before I even picked up a pen or a can of paint, like and even considered doing it seriously. I'm like maybe 10 years old, sitting at my grandma's house and shit, and fucking there was this movie, and I'm sure both of you heard of it before, and most of you listening have heard of it before. It was called Dreams Don't Die. And this film was on Channel 7, and they aired it like for the first time ever. You know what I mean? And I didn't know what graffiti was. All I know is this kid who wrote King 57 and shit was painting trains, and that shit just caught my attention. And I sat there for, 2 hours? Well, however long the movie was, I sat there for 2 hours in amazement. You know what I'm saying? Just amazed at what I was seeing. I didn't know what the fuck I was really watching. But it definitely caught my attention. Yeah. Years later, it kind of became a real thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the first time I was ever exposed to this shit, you know? But then for real, just seeing cats like Slim, you know what I mean? Seeing cats like Riff, R-Dubs, you know what I'm saying? RW, shout out to RW. Seeing cats like that, man, getting up. And that really drove me to, you know, put a big influence on me.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's kind of funny, man. The beginnings are kind of, you're looking at your immediate surroundings, you're seeing like maybe the neighborhood kids reacting and just, you know, catching on to a trend, a bit of a tag. You don't quite know what it is quite yet or understand the nuance to, you know, getting your name up and you know, this is the thing that you're supposed to, you know, go all city with, or just basically you're advertising yourself. Like, you know, I never really saw it as that. And then it just seemed like it was a little bit here and there. And then all at once, it was just kind of sort of everywhere. And as soon as I started making my way out of Parker Said, that's when I started noticing, like, oh, wow, that guy's Flint WOD. I saw that near Parker Said. And then when I drove over to, well, my mom drove me, when we drove over to Forest Hill, I saw a big Slink WOD over there, too. I was like, oh, that's the same guy. And then, you know, how does he do this? It must be at night, in the middle of the night, you know, on some secret squirrel shit. You know, you imagine how these things are done. And then maybe you'll go downtown and then you'll see Slink WOD again. And then so before you know it, you start noticing these other tags. You see Riff. You see Slim. You see you're driving up a freeway off of Ceremony Boulevard going to Shoe Fair, and you see this piece by Doug Eyes, and you're like, oh, and, you know, holy shit, what was that? And then, you know, I'm telling my mom, circle back around so I can get to look at what I'm seeing, you know. And then as you start to make your way inside the city, you know, between Alamany and maybe Upper Mission, you start seeing, oh, there's another piece right there. And this one is like, it's kind of complex. It's kind of vortex looking. It's got lightning bolts coming out of it. And you're like, what the hell is this? You know, and then soon before you know it, you talk to your friends and they're like, oh yeah, they're kind of already in the know. I mean, that's kind of how, you know, for me was, I felt like all these things were happening around me and I was just kind of like a bystander but I was really interested and I needed to know more. So the more people I asked, it seems like more people had information, but it was always limited. It was always like, you know, from the outside looking in. It was just like here and there, and then all at once, everywhere. And then keep in mind, I was only seeing, you know, maybe a fraction of the city. I wasn't even aware of all the stuff that was going on downtown, maybe even closer to Shox area, even further on, deeper into Mission. I wasn't even aware that there was, you know, little walls that graffiti writers have known that were spots to go and bomb pieces and stuff. So, and this was around maybe, I want to say safely between 84 and 85, maybe. I was still a young kid. So, you know, those are, you know, my into graffiti, me starting to notice and really just I wanted to know what this was all about because it just I was intrigued. You know, I was all in 100%.
Yeah, no, it, back then it was really hard to see, like, when it came around. I mean, it's not like the internet where you could just whatever, you know, it's right at your fingertips. I remember just the little pictures of graffiti and like those breaking books. You know what I mean? And it wasn't even, you know, you see like two tags or a piece here and there, you know, and it had nothing to do with breaking, but because it was hip hop, you know. But yeah, I remember like even like cutting out pictures of the newspaper because of that Bernie Getz shooting out in New York. There were tags on the subways and I was biting them.
Yeah.
You know?
Go ahead. Go ahead, Don. I was just about to say, that's another thing, too. Growing up in a time where there was no such thing as internet. You know what I mean? Like, growing up in a time to where all these things weren't at your fingertips. If you wanted to see graffiti, you had to literally get up off your ass and go see graffiti.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. If you spent a whole day or whatever the case may be, painting a piece or whatnot, and you took a picture of your shit, it wasn't like, oh, let me pull out my phone, snap a picture, and post it on Instagram. It's like, oh, let me take this picture, bring my shit down to the fucking film developer place, drop it off to him, and wait a week until your shit comes back, and then I'll know what my shit looks like. You know what I'm saying? So things were definitely different back then.
Yeah. And for sure, like, you know, as far as my case, you definitely had to have the inside track. Knowing the writers that were kind of in the know, you know, there could have been, you know, a few yards away from your house, a graffiti spot that you may not have known about unless somebody told you. Or, you know, you understand what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't until, like, you know, I'm driving around. Well, my mom's driving me around, actually, because I was just a little kid. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if we're driving by a school and I look over and I see the tops of, like, graffiti pieces, you know, I'm like, Mom, stop. I got to go in there and take pictures of this graffiti in the school or whatever. You know, that's the way I found that at first. And, you know, like I said, my friends back in my own neighborhood, they really, you know, they weren't so nuanced about all the stuff going on around the city. They were just kind of like, you know, what they heard through drips and drabs of information and Beach Street and stuff like that or whatever. You know, it wasn't really that much of a big deal to them as it was to me. Yeah, but, you know, it wasn't until high school that I really, really started meeting people and getting to know what this whole thing was all about. I'm sorry, Don, go ahead.
No, I'm good. I said my piece. It's good.
So what was the vibe back then? Like, you know, how, when you was out there, what was that feeling like getting up, going to, you know, doing a piece, you know, your first piece? How was that feeling?
Very toyish. Very toyish. The first piece I ever did, I don't even think it was a feeling, man. The first piece I did officially was like a throw up and shit. I thought I was doing something, man. But, you know, the first thing I ever did was like half a block away from my house at the time. And shit, I had like a can of black and I fucking did an outline and totally ruined the building. But anyway, long story short, yeah, that was my first experience, my first attempt at the shit. I thought, like I said, once again, I thought I was doing something. Really wasn't doing that much, but I thought I was doing something. But yeah, yeah, I don't know, man. Back then, the vibe back then, it was just exciting, man. That's the best way I can describe it to you. It was exciting.
Yeah.
One word only, exciting.
Yeah. It was just all new. And there was definitely a difference between, and I guess we'll get into this later, New York graph and the way San Franciscans interpreted graffiti. It was completely different. You know, the rules were there, but it was very different. And I saw it as something that was different as well. Like, all the old writers from back then that were getting up, doing pieces and stuff, they had their, like, own style. And that style, I don't know, man. It, you know, today's tagging in San Francisco, I don't want to speak bad about it, but I just don't know what it is. I can't really, it doesn't resonate with me at all. Back then, I think kids had more of a sense of what the tag is supposed to look like. And at the same time, having, you know, looking at New York and, you know, getting all this information from wherever they're getting it from. And then at the same time, having a more of a understanding and then interpreting that onto the wall
And then it comes out like this, this Frisco style, you know, what I described earlier, this like kind of chunky vortex with a, this kind of like little bit of this black 3D that everybody did with the little streaks in your black. And then you would do lightning bolts on the outside, and it just looked so dope, you know, to me. And I even look back on those pictures, and with, you know, I just look at it the same as I did back then as I do today, where you would show somebody that's, you know, not familiar with San Francisco graffiti, they can look at, you know, look at these pieces like, oh, yeah, that's, yeah, that looks like what it is, early graffiti in your hometown or whatever, sure, and just totally dismiss it. But for me, I'll always have a soft spot for those old pieces from the mid-'80s, and always. But no, back then it was really exciting. And just trying to absorb and learn as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, no, I mean, another thing, like, you know, it's not like today. Back then, you had to rack your stuff. You know what I mean? You had to rack. I mean, if you didn't, it was one of those, like, you know, you're a toy or whatever. So, I mean, you know, in hip-hop, you got, you know, breakdancing, all that stuff. We were the only outlaws really doing that stuff. So, I mean, and, you know, you guys knew, you know, like, oh, man, I'm doing something wrong. It's not like, oh, you know, I'm just going to spin on a linoleum and shit. And, you know what I mean? It's all good. Our job was a little harder. How'd you guys take that on?
Oh, very recklessly.
Yeah. I mean, was it like that leap of faith? You know what I mean?
Cats just didn't give a fuck. I mean, really, it depends on like how old, what era you're speaking on, man. But just in general, like back then in the early years when we were just really, really young, we just didn't give a shit. Mm. Did whatever the fuck we wanted.
Now, honestly, we're talking about OLT days, right? Of course.
The what?
Are we talking about that era? Are we talking about the ROT era?
Well, let's talk about
the ROT era or just
STP, more the crew. Who was in the crew? A lot of people, yeah. A lot of people weren't familiar. I remember Race, you, and Shock. Rule and Shock. That's all I remember from. But there was, I'm sure there was a lot.
Through the hallway,
right?
Okay. You want to take this off?
No, go for it, man.
Okay, go ahead. STP started off. It was me, Shock, and Erase. And for the people that don't know Erase, for the people that, you know, are familiar with Frisco Graph early on, everyone knows who Erase was. But for those people who don't know, Erase was this guy who was extremely talented at hand styles. Extremely talented. Probably, you know, the best that I've ever seen. And he just had a natural gift for, like, writing. I don't know what it was. Johnny was doing Muslim scripts. He was doing Japanese characters. You know, his natural writing was as clean as I've ever seen it, and just neat. So when it came to tagging and hand styles, I think it was just a natural thing for him.
Well, definitely had hands on him, man. Definitely had hands on him.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You know, almost at it, like I would say, at a genius level of just hand styles. Like, he would just come up with stuff that would just amaze, you know, me and Don and just pretty much everybody. And when Erase was in ROT as well, even back then as well, even though he didn't really get up any pieces during ROT as much, I don't know if Johnny rocked a piece for ROT. I'm not really sure, but he certainly tagged up here and there. But he was definitely known as that guy with the crazy hand styles, for sure. And so it started off with me, Shock, and Erase. And then, we had, I think, a pretty good start. That beginning of SCP was, I think, right what we wanted. We wanted to kind of, like, focus on just piecing, keeping the crew kind of small and tight. And there was, there was reasons for this, too, as well, because, you know, harkening back to, like, ROT, which was, you know, as Shock calls it, you know, organized craziness. you know, and yet throughout the year, when ROT first started, it was, you know, definitely we were hyper-focused on piecing, but we definitely had the aspect of, you know, kind of going all city, and definitely tagging was important. You know, I had me and Fate, rest in peace, had extensive knowledge of, like, the train lines
And I think Shock You as well, right? You guys on that side were crushing trains as well. Like,
oh, during those years, man?
Yeah.
A lot of destruction. That's all I can really say, man. A lot of bombing.
Yep.
All out bombing. That's it. You know what I mean? Destroying everything. Everything.
I think we pretty much had control of the train lines in San Francisco, without a doubt. All T was just... And then,
had them joints on lock, kids.
Yeah, we had a lock. Yeah, because every train was just like, if it wasn't me and Fate going home on the M line, normally our deal was we take it all the way into Lakeview, and as soon as everybody got off, we just started tagging up the trains. And then we'd hop off and then catch the next one going, you know, back inbound. And then we do the same thing again, reach West Portal, switch over, catch another train going back down. And then as that all kind of progressed, the tagging thing and everything, there was more guys in RLT that were from the Sunset area. There was this one spot called the 10 spot. And that was like an intersection at Portola and West Portal. And what it was the trains would pull up and we would hide in this parking lot behind some bushes. And then when the trains pull up, we'd just cross over the bushes and just completely just destroy the train. And you're after doing this a few times, you know, soon before you know, you're all city, you know? It's just what it was. But okay, going back to SCP though. So the things we wanted to focus on in SCP was just kind of piecing, and we didn't mind catching up the tags and everything. That was fine. But, we, you know, from RLT, when RLT was just kind of a centralized group of maybe, I don't know what, Don, we started off at like 15 heads and then it just exploded to like 50 heads. And then you had a whole bunch of people in this crew that, you know, from the mission, I think we had a couple of guys that might have been from Swamp, I'm not even sure, just kind of all over, just spread out. And, you know, the more people you have in the crew, the harder it is to keep, you know, a lid on the beef and all the bullshit. So with all these people in the crew and plus with RLT going like super all city with, you know, all these people, you know, rocking RLT, you know, a lot of things transpired. A lot of beefs carried over. It was this total organized chaos after a while, you know. So we kind of like took those lessons from RLT and we're like, well, let's not do that. You know, maybe, you know, focusing on tagging and being all city is not really the way to go. You know, let's settle on, you know, focus on pieces and just like really, really focus on quality stuff. At the time as well, I was still kind of learning my lettering as well. I was still, Shock has always been a letter guy. His letters have always been top notch and superb. If you look back in some of his old books, man, it's just, it's all there, man. All the funk and the rules of lettering and everything, it's all there. I wish I had, you know, paid more attention to my guy, you know, right here more instead of, you know, when you're young, you have an ego and you think you're the shit. But, you know, so SCP was, you know, our whole intention was to focus on just kind of letters and just kind of like, you know, not so much going all city, but just focusing on quality. And that's why we kept the circle like really small and tight. And then later on, we let in Curse, which was another guy, another homie from RLT. And Don, you want to talk about Curse or?
Go right ahead, man. I'm listening.
Okay.
I'm asleep right now. So,
okay. Gotcha, bro. So Curse was a good homie. Definitely skilled with piecing. He had letters for days. He was another one. But what happened was me and Chop were like going around Sunset and we were just rocking kind of pieces in these like schoolyards. And we were on a roll, man. We had like many, many pieces under the belt and everything was just, you know, like clockwork. You know, we'd meet up, we'd have a couple of cans in the bag, we'd, you know, chill at Shock's house. And then as soon as it got dark, and maybe even not, sometimes we'd go out in the broad daylight, it really didn't matter. And we were just definitely on a roll, kind of just, you know, greasing the skids for SCP, just trying to slowly but surely get the name out in the Sunset area. And just one night we took Curse with us bombing, and we had this rooftop. We were chasing out this school that had a nice walls on the rooftop. And so we went over there, and I guess we got spotted climbing up the one of the gates and hopping on the roofs.
And then before, I swear to God's life, before we were even able to, like, get a first outline out, it was, like, police lights already. Like,
wow.
Spotlights. Yeah. They were like, oh, shit, is this for us? Yeah. Is this for us? So I think Shock looked over the ledge and he's like, yeah, this, they're coming for us. And keep in mind, there was nowhere to run. We're on a rooftop. There's only one way in, one way out.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, we all got bags. We got taken to the station, you know. You know, when you have the opportunity to run, you run. But, I mean, where are we going to go? You know, there's only one way in, one way out, like I said. So it was like, yeah, we're fucked. We're busted. Uh-huh. So they took us in. And I remember, you know, when Kirsten's mom came to pick him up, she was like absolutely horrified. Absolutely horrified. And then I looked at Shock and I said, yeah, we're not seeing this guy ever again. I think your graffiti career is over, bro. And then, yeah, we didn't hear from Curse for, as far as, you know, his graffiti career is pretty much shut down at that point.
Yeah, it was over. It was definitely over.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, so it remained me and Shock and Erase for, you know, quite some years. And then later on, kind of towards the end, we got Mike 5-0 in, who used to tag Paint USC. He was just, you know, Mike was always a good homie. He was always just, you know how people just, you know, mesh up and just, you know, we all intertwine and become friendly and, you know, everything becomes family. So Mike was getting up STP. Kind of towards the end, he definitely repped it hard.
Yeah.
And then there was a few other guys kind of in the crew that were just kind of like, just kind of homies. And we just kind of let him in. And after that, it was pretty much it. We pretty much at that point, I'm skipping over a lot of stuff, but I'm just kind of going from A to Z.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, we kind of, me and Shock and Race were just really hyper-focused on music. And then we kind of put the graph to the back burner. I think that was probably around like 94-ish, something like that. And so that's the A to Z for SDP as far as who is in the crew at what point, you know?
Mm. No, I've seen a lot of
guys. There's a whole.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of guys.
Yeah,
there's a whole. It was good.
Yeah.
Word,
yeah.
Right on.
You know.
Right on. So, but yeah, around that time, though, too, I mean, like, the time he would be, the time Rule was talking about, like, towards mm-hmm. the ending, man, everybody got to kind of keep their mind, too. We're getting a little older, too. You know, things are changing in life. You know what I mean? Cats actually started working. You know what I mean? As opposed to running around in the street all the time, painting and tagging and shit like that. Cats actually started working, got girlfriends and shit like that to be with. And you know what I mean? So life was kind of changing, too, at the same time. So that's one thing Alex really didn't mention. Life started changing a lot for all of us too at the same time, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Everybody knows how that goes. Word.
Yeah, life word. Actually, yeah, it messed up my career a couple of times, so you know. You know, I get that. But I mean, yeah, we're all getting older, people are getting into more different things. I mean, honestly, to tell you the truth, the career of a writer in San Francisco, if it passed two years, that was a lot, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I would say even now more than ever. Back then there was an explosion of writers, new writers all the time. You know, kind of coming and going. But either way, you had the main, select guys. Just so many dudes who were just writing at that moment in time. Is there new writers? In San Francisco nowadays, I know maybe there's a couple here and there, but I don't think the crops of them, they don't, you know, appear anymore. They're just kind of like, I guess maybe the kids are just not feeling graffiti. I don't know what it is. I'm sorry.
I don't think you're looking in the right places, man, to be quite honest with you. There's some talent out here. Honestly, there's some talent out here. I mean, a lot of cats that I see on Instagram, I don't know these cats. I've never met them before. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they're definitely getting it in. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. I don't know if they're up to your standards or not. You know what I mean? But I'm just saying, they're still out there getting busy. They're still out there doing stuff. So, I mean, you know, it's not like they don't exist no more.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I meant the amount of writers. Like, it's certainly not what it was back then. You know.
Oh, yeah. I've never been in it. Like, when we grew up with this, I mean, that was the explosion. I'm saying Dianne Feinstein was the mayor of our city back then. I remember that much for sure during a particular era. And graffiti was just out of control out here, out of fucking control. There was nothing you can do to stop the situation or correct the situation or better the situation for the city. Because we pretty much, like I said previously, we pretty much was out there doing whatever the fuck we wanted. You know what I mean? And nothing stopped us from doing what we wanted to do. Nothing. You know, the law couldn't stop us. We didn't give a fuck about that shit because we were up in the yards. We were doing all that. You know what I mean? Transit yards, all that. It didn't matter. Daytime shots, whatever. It was knocking shit out. You know what I mean? So my point is, back then, it was just so many graffiti writers, man, as opposed to today. It ain't the same. It is definitely not the same. I don't think it'll ever be the same as, you know, the mid-'80s. Mid to late 80s, it's just as far as like the volume of graffiti writers and the volume of kids out there fucking smashing shit and destroying shit and they're all about it. You know what I mean? Like graffiti was just supercharged back then, supercharged in this city.
Yeah.
It was insane, man. I mean, you know, like, I hate to phrase it this way, but if you wasn't there, you miss it. You ain't gonna experience that shit. There ain't no other experience like that. No other experience. You know, like just being a kid in your teens, or whether it be your early teens, mid-teens, or late teens, a kid growing up in the San Francisco Bay Area and being a graffiti writer. you ain't going to feel no shit like that.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It was incredible. It was fucking energetic. It was, I mean, you know what I mean? It was so many different vibes behind that whole era and just being a kid and growing up in that shit. You know what I mean? And all your peers are just as good as you are, if not better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, you get motivated off seeing your friends, like, fucking get down. You know what I mean? And seeing your friends get up and seeing your friends, just seeing what your friends do is very influential. And it drives you and shit, you know? Makes you want to go out and get up harder. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just crazy, bro.
No, yeah.
It's just crazy
once it hit momentum, I mean, there was a force. Definitely a force.
Yeah. Well, and then you had piecing spots just kind of everywhere, spread throughout San Francisco. You know, nowadays, I think the main vein is Lilac Alley for the most part. And then you'll see kind of drips and drabs of pieces here and there throughout San Francisco. But back in the day, it was like you had Silver Terrace, you had Crocker, you had Cycle City, you had Ben Franklin right across the street, and then you had Norfolk Alley. And then you had, you know, We Were Killing the Sunset.
Did you mention Silver?
Yeah, I mean, there was just so many spots back then. Oh, and not to mention Chinatown too as well. There were spots over there. So it was kind of just spread throughout the city. And no matter where you went, just around the corner, there was probably, you know, kind of a graffiti gallery just for you to check out. You know, now not so much anymore. Like I said, it's all relegated to that one alleyway for the most part. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't come across many young writers either. And, you know, this is what this game's all about. For it to survive, you need that young blood coming into the game and just, you know, picking up kind of where we left off. You know, there's a few young cats and they're definitely doing their thing. You know, but like I said, it wasn't like it was back then. You know,
well, let me interject really quick. I mean, like what you're talking about as far as the young kids nowadays, I think that what it really bottoms out to, and this is just my opinion for whatever it's worth, for these young cats, either you get it or you don't. You know what I mean? Like a lot of these cats just really don't. Young cats, let me reiterate, a lot of these young cats, they just kind of don't get it. You know what I mean? They're doing their own thing.
Yeah.
It's not a, it might not, let me clarify, just because you tag doesn't necessarily mean you do graffiti, quote unquote, if that makes any sense to you guys.
If you just tag.
100%. Yeah, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, nowadays, nowadays too, a lot of these kids, they don't have that whole, like, they don't stick with things. They don't have that drive to, like, really want, you know what I mean? It's everything's pretty quick for them.
Well, I mean, there's a big difference between being a graffiti writer and being, like, a tag banger.
Mm-hmm.
You dig what I'm saying? Like, you know, graffiti writers, I don't know, it's just as everybody knows, it's a culture. You know what I mean? So either you're in that little circle practicing and studying what everybody else does from our generation, or you're just off doing whatever you're doing. You feel me?
Yeah.
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 If that makes any kind of sense to you guys.
So who are your influences? Like my influences are from New York, of course, is Duster. I looked at a lot of Duster stuff and seen. What did you guys look at when you're growing up and now?
My first influence, like my first big major influence, is a guy out of Daly City or San Francisco, and his name is Riff. Both of you guys both know him, man. Big shout out to Riff, man. That was the dude that actually made me want to do graffiti for real. That guy. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he was one of the pioneers. I mean, with his Mr. A throw-ups,
yeah, no doubt.
I mean, that's the first time I seen him with his Mr. A throw-ups, and then he had a bunch of tags, but his Mr. A throw-ups, I remember just one on Powell, and I was just like, how did he get it? You know what I mean? It was right there, going up the escalator in your face, so, yeah, Riff was definitely...
The first time, I think I was attending Lincoln High School before I got fucking kicked out of that school for graffiti, what else? I was in ROTC, and I remember class ended, and I walked out the ROTC room, and Riff did this fucking red piece. It was a three-letter joint. It said Riff. It was in red, and fucking he did sparkles, bro. And that's the first time I've seen anybody paint sparkles shining off of letters, and that shit blew me the fuck away. Like, that shit just looked so incredible to me, man, and the way he did it, and it's just like, yo, I need to do that shit, too. You know what I'm saying? Like, that shit got me so pumped, yo. That shit got me so pumped, and I was like, yo, this is what I want to do. And, yeah, man, that had a big major influence on me and shit. Word up.
Cool.
Yeah, man.
Alex?
For me, it was pretty much all the pieces I was seeing for the most part. Let me see. Early on, definitely, you know, Reckless Riders, of course, because I was in close proximity to a lot of the work. I would say a lot of deaf artists, too. Fury, Risk. Those guys definitely, especially when I was able to venture out a little more and kind of see, like, for instance, like Mark Twain. I just stumbled upon Mark Twain one day, and there was a whole bunch of pieces in there. And it was, I think, Deaf Artists and K-Sun. Later, I would become a member of K-Sun. That's a whole other story.
Yeah, that's a crew.
Yeah, dude.
Definitely the artists,
yeah.
Kalur, Robs, Risk, those guys very early on. I remember in Cayuga, there was somebody did this piece that said Wild Style. To this day, I don't even know who did it. I have a Polaroid of it, but I was just, amazed, and that was, we're talking maybe 85, maybe, maybe even early. I'm not even sure. But, these people who did these pieces, just all that just really just influenced me and just kind of, raised, my level of understanding graffiti and kind of what it's supposed to look like. Because it's one thing to see it on TV or see it in a book like Subway Art, but then it's another thing to see it in person. You get to go closer to the wall and see the line technique and everything. And I was just, pretty much, those are, my early influences for sure. Just anything in close proximity to me. I remember this one time in Park Merced, somebody did this piece that said CAP, C-A-P. And it wasn't the CAP guy, throw up. It was like letters, actual letters. And it was like a three color. It was like a black outline with a white fill and some like red doodads inside. And it was like extremely well done. No, the guy didn't tag or anything. It just said, the piece said CAP, and I was just like, man. And this is, goes back to what I was saying, like, everything just seemed to start popping up all at once, within, like, maybe a year and a half's time, it just, all these pieces started to appear, and it was just like, I already kind of knew it was a thing, but, again, at that point, I didn't have the inside track. Later on, when I went to Sacred Heart, I met this guy, Risk DA, and that was kind of one of my earliest contacts to actual writers with that had the inside track in the city. And I remember he had his black book and he had a shitload of pictures of shit I've never seen before inside the city. And I remember going through his black book and just being like amazed and just like, oh my God. And then, I pulled out my black book. I showed it to him, and he was like, yeah, that's cool. Yeah. All right. And then I'm just looking through his shit and just trying to absorb everything and just, just completely just blown away and just like, I have to meet more writers. I have to, see where all these pieces are at, So that was like my earliest exposures to graffiti. Plus, you know, subway art always helped as well, definitely, you know.
Yeah, right now you're in New York, right? What was the difference?
Yeah.
When you went to New York and, you know, from the writers from San Francisco, like?
The first writers I came across, it was kind of, you know, it's kind of funny, Sai, because when, because me and Erase, we moved out to New York in like 94. And we weren't really in graffiti mode at that point, but it was funny. I came across like a shitload of writers early on. And I remember all the writers I came across, they were kind of well-rounded in all the aspects of graph for the most part. I'm not saying they were, the best in one or the other necessarily, but they were certainly like they took care and to understand like the throw up is important. Your tag style is important, and you definitely have to have piecing. So I'm not saying that's the case for like all the writers in New York. I can't say, but the ones I came across early on in the early 90s, they all seem to like understand that you have to have a solid black book. The tag style is super important, and yeah, throwies are certainly important. So they seem a lot more well-rounded as far as that goes, and the way they kind of like tag their name. That whole approach, it was just they had all something in common. Just like I guess back in Frisco, we kind of all have something in common about the way we write our name. It may not be something that you could see or I could see or Shock could see, but it's certainly like if an outsider going into the city, they could probably see like, yeah, all these guys have very similar hand styles. Even though they have their own style in their own way, but you can tell they all kind of come from the same place. You know, it's all about how we, you know, process and absorb information. And then we translate it into what it is. But definitely New Yorkers definitely had something very similar about their hand styles, the way they did it. And to be honest with you, back then, you know, kind of taking the trains, me and Erase. And this also, while me and Johnny were kind of like taking trains and then just checking out the city and all that other stuff, we came across some just hard, like ill hand styles, like shit, like, that would just completely blow everybody away. And this like really just, you know, pushed Johnny to like really just jump up his game already as far as hand styles. And then he was just like just learning and just absorbing and picking up like the motions and everything, just really paying attention to letters and what, you know, what the next letters should look like, you know, and then just from A to Z essentially. And then just so Johnny's game became even more intensified when we had moved to New York City as far as like hand styles. Like even though we were focused on music and all that other stuff, Johnny never stopped like, you know, working on hand styles and tagging and all that other shit. He never stopped. So by I'd say about like 95, Johnny, in my opinion, he was probably one of the best. Erase was probably the best person to who had mastered hand styles. There was unquestionably probably the dopest. Absolutely. I don't know what Johnny's up to now. He's probably still, you know, doing hand styles for the most part. But back then, man, he was just murdering it. And we just like, we'd take trains into like little cutties in New York, Queens and all this other stuff. And we just like, he'd come back. Like he said, yo dude, I found this crazy ass tag today. This dude, I think it was Jester or Tester or something. He was just like, yo, it's some shit I've never seen before. And he would just kind of like, you know, write it down and just try to figure out, you know, the whole mind frame of that person who's tagging and just kind of like absorb it. And then just like, retranslate it in his own style and just learn it essentially. Yeah, he was, dude, it was no joke, man, when it came to hand style for sure.
Yeah, I remember his pieces. Pieces were dope.
Yeah, Johnny has some ill pieces for sure. He did rep SDP with a couple of pieces. We definitely put in some work. And I don't know. But Johnny's definitely his strength was definitely the hand styles for sure. Me and Shock always pushed Johnny to get up on the wall, you know, as much as possible. And he did box some pieces with us. That was, you know, pretty dope. But at the end of it all, this dude was like no joke when it came to like, you know, writing tags and hand styles and everything.
Yeah, that's one thing that it's sad. Like, you see a lot of these writers now, they'll do a dope piece, but their tag will be just like garbage. You know,
yeah.
They just don't have that connection. You know, it's really hard.
Yeah.
You know,
word.
You know, I think San Francisco, you know, over here, we had this thing where it was like you had to have this fresh tag, and then you had to have these dope fucking pieces. But I think we lost a lot in between as far as like throw ups and straight letters and stuff like that. I think our focus on the tag and the piece definitely made us different from other styles, you know what I mean? Or like from what we were looking at in New York.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I just think out here, it just went from one extreme to the other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Either you were tagging and you went straight up into piecing and you really didn't focus on doing throwies. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't really take the time to cover the middle ground. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't even think we even touched on throwies. I don't, you know what I mean? I think a lot of people didn't really do
that. Not a lot of people did, to be quite honest.
I never had a throw.
Not until later on, you know what I mean?
So, like
back in the early 80s, man, not really too many people had throwies, you know what I mean? You either had a tag or you were getting your name up, like, for real, doing a piece, you know what I mean? But throwies weren't really, as far as my recollection goes, throwies weren't really too big back in the, like, mid to late 80s, they weren't really big out here, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, the 80s too, like, we had Scene's piece, we had Zephyr come out, right? And they didn't do it. We didn't see any throw-ups, or if we did, they weren't, to us, we thought they were like pieces, you know what I mean? Simple pieces, but like, I don't think until the late 90s when like KR and Shock and Twist and all them were getting up and reminisced that they were doing, they were focused on throw-ups, that like I started being like, oh, okay, I never could make one, you know. It was hard for me back then, so, but yeah, I definitely noticed having throws, having a being in a good arsenal. What's up?
You're talking about the other Shock, right?
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah, Shock from UWS, I'm sorry, Shock from Upper West Side. My bad.
Word. No, just so everybody, you know, just so everybody knows what's going on, that's all.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody's on the same
page.
When all these guys from out of town I think the mid-90s, when they started, maybe early 90s somewhat, started coming in and doing the throwies, and then also just hitting spots that we normally wouldn't hit either.
Mm-hmm.
Just these really just very ballsy, bold spots. And, you know, you would drive down, I don't know, Fulton, or some place that's very open, and then you just see like a bless ATR or some, like, holy shit. It was just like, wow, it's crazy. They just, you know, how they, you know, in broad, you know, totally exposed. It must work super fast or something. But all that outside influence, you know, really, really, I think, pushed Frisco to kind of like reassess, I think, and just reacclimate, and okay, we should start focusing on throwies. We should pay attention to our tags again. Because, you know, back in the day, I think Frisco was really, with the hand styles, if you look back at some of those old pictures of some of the hand style sites, dude, like, they're really dope, man. You know, I got tons of pictures with just tags alone. And I'm talking about, like, maybe, you know, 85, 86. People were hyper-focused on tagging, and then a lot of the pieces as well. But then, as the years went on, I would say up till now, there's not so much of that. I don't think there's, the tagging has become kind of separate from graffiti overall, in a way. It's become its own sport, you know? You could be a tagger, in San Francisco and not necessarily know any actual, like, other writers, like, piecers in San Francisco. That kind of became a thing. I can name several guys that kind of like turned that into their own thing, but you know, there's no need, but you guys kind of understand what I'm saying. The guys who do the one flow, Frisco style. Many of those guys are just not really, you know, don't have the inside track to writers in Frisco. It's not like they can't, you know, that, you know, writers in San Francisco are inaccessible. It's just, you know, it's just they choose not to, or choose not, you know, I'm going to do my tag and that's as far as it's going to go. You know, I'm going to do this one flow on this bus and that's pretty much it. You know, whereas back then you, as a writer, you were just definitely well-rounded. You knew kind of everybody. You had the inside track, you know, you knew if you were a tagger that was getting up, you definitely knew, some major pieces back then, you know? And that's just pretty much how it was.
Yeah, no, I mean, all the tags back then were all original. I mean, everybody had their own originality. And then sooner or later, you know, sooner or later, something would catch on, like the backwards S or like a E to a Z, you know, those things would catch on and people would gravitate to that. And then I think after a while, it got standardized for a little bit where it had that real, like clean printing type stuff. Remember that? And then all of a sudden it just got into like as fast as you can. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, man. That's pretty much how it is now. As fast as you can. Cats don't put no craftsmanship into their fucking tags no more. Yeah, really don't. And I think that's that particular style Rule was talking about earlier, that Frisco one flow style. That's just, you know what I mean? Like,
which is sadly, Frisco's famous for that. You know, a lot.
Yeah,
of people,
anyway.
Well,
not a fan of it. Not a fan of it. But anyway, that's just my thing.
Yeah, we're a lot older now too, so we're not really doing the bus hopping thing or whatever. So it's like not really our thing. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but the whole thing about it is when we were out there bus hopping, man, we had hands. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like how your tag looked when you left the spot, that was like really important. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, took time to make sure that your hands were right when you got up. You know what I mean?
No,
not just
true.
Do it as fast as I can and leave some sloppy ass shit lying around for everybody to see and do it like 50 more times throughout the rest of your day. Like, nah, man, if I'm gonna get up, I'm gonna get up the best way I can. And, you know, stylize my shit and personalize that shit the best way I can, you know, so I stand out different from everybody else. You know what I mean? So my tag differentiates from everybody else's tags. But, you know, now everybody's tag looks the same because they all do that one flow style that, you know what I mean? There's no originality anymore. There isn't.
And you can't get fame. I mean, I just remember just like either the style of your tag would get you fame or like you could read your tag. You get what I'm saying? And that's how you got fame.
It was a little bit of both. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it was a little bit of both. Like your tag was like your trademark. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, certain cats got up a certain way, and like Jams, for example. Jams is a perfect example. Nobody
Jams
got
had
it
a one
like
flow.
Either.
I think 100%.
But nobody.
But still,
nobody
like good handwriting. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. But my whole point is nobody did that. Nobody else did that. He's the only one who did that. And like, if you seen a Jams tag, you automatically identified who that was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That
definitely,
was Jams.
Definitely.
Yeah, it was easy to spot. It was easy to identify. It was easy to read. You knew who that was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You didn't have to sit there for 20 seconds trying to figure out, okay, what does this shit say? You know what I mean? Just because it was scribbled all sloppy and shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
even
UB40. As fast as he could do it.
Yeah, yeah. Even UB40, I've watched him do his tags back then, and I remember it was a one flow, but the thing is that he made it legible. You know, it wasn't a gibberish.
Yeah, word.
And he had a standard tag that he always did, so.
Word.
Yeah, that's.
Word.
You know,
shout out to UB40. Yeah. Yeah, UB40, man.
UB40.
Yeah. Shout. Word. Yeah.
And this is what I'm saying. It's like back in the day, you know, guys like Jams or UB40 or Run-NCP. Run-NCP definitely had that one flow. All these hand styles were pleasant to look at. You would look at, like, you know, it's very clean and well executed. You know, and I don't want to bash on these guys these days. You know, they're going to do the thing. You know, it's all good, though. But I'm just, you know, pointing out that the differences from then and to now, and how, you know, we cared about, you know, the things that we cared about, how your tag looked, you know, the presentation of it all. And as opposed to now, it's just like, I'm just going to get my name up and just, you know, onto the next bus or whatever. You understand what I'm saying?
I'm going to do it as fast as I can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny how these bus hoppers all got kind of the same. It all looks the same. It's all like, it looks like, oh, one guy's doing these hand styles these days. But no, it's many, many, many different cats doing these styles.
Yeah, and you know.
It's cool, but you know, but what I'm saying is, since these guys have cut themselves off from like riders and the culture of it all, then these are things like the little details about, hey man, you should learn a, you know, a dope hand style. You should write your name differently, or, you know, all these things kind of fall through the cracks.
Yeah.
And if they're left unchecked, then, because this is not just a new phenomenon, this has been going on for years.
Yeah.
You know, if left unchecked, you know, now you got like freaking over 20 years of this style that that these guys have not really developed, not tweaked or freaked or anything. It's just this like continuation of this like quick one flow that the Frisco guys do. Again,
I think it just really depends on who you're soaking up game from. You know what I mean? Who's influencing you? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Like,
but what I'm saying is, because they're not connected to the draft riding community, they, you know, all these things are all the little details that are important to graffiti riders just seem to fall through the cracks.
They don't care to know, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
They got their own culture. They're all doing their thing, which is totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just, you know, we're just, you know, having a conversation about, you know, what happened to hand styles in San Francisco. And to what it is now, you know, it's a group of kids that have separated themselves from all the other riders, and they kind of just went off on their own tangent, and now they have this style that they've been rolling with for like, you know, I think over 20 years, and it's been unchecked, and I don't think anyone's really bothered to have a conversation with them. You know, again, it's, you know, it's neither here nor there for me, but I just think it's important to talk about for sure.
No, yeah, I mean, you know, we're the older riders, and we hope that someone peeps some game, and next thing you know, you might see some dope hand styles out there, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So you moved to New York, and Erase moved to New York, and Don, you were doing music too at that time, right? After STP?
I still do music, as a matter of fact, but yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
Word.
And then, what year was that, 94?
Yeah, 94.
Word.
So let's talk about, I found this. Let's talk about this track right here. This is the instrumental. But I dug this up. I'm gonna let that play in the background right now, right? So,
word up.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's talk about the music, bro. You know how
you want to talk about that particular record right there, or what? Because that particular record got a story behind it. But yeah,
that's why I picked it. That's why I definitely picked it. I wanted you guys to talk on it.
That particular record is called Strictly Kings and Better, which is a graffiti title by Scheme from New York and shit. But yeah, anyways, make a long story short, that particular record is, if I'm not mistaken, that's my first ever released on wax, on vinyl. You know what I mean? It was a super big deal to me back then because, man, I had to fly all the way out to New York City to record that with this guy over here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was a James Bond mission. It really was, man.
Nice.
And to make a long story short, man, my initial goal before I recorded that record was like, yo, I want DJ Premier to fucking hear this record. You know what I mean? I just want him to hear it. That was just my goal, and surprisingly enough, DJ Premier used that record, elements of that particular record you just played, to scratch on two different fucking records of his.
Yeah.
So, you know, mission accomplished on that one, man. Shout out to DJ Premier. Shit.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
How was that feeling when you guys found out that Premier used it?
I couldn't believe what I was hearing, to be quite honest with you, man. I had to pinch myself to make sure I wasn't, like, fucking having a dream and shit, you know what I mean? And somebody, no rude awakening type of shit, man. But, yeah, it was like, it took me a couple of days for it to soak in and shit, because that was a big-ass deal. Like I said, all I wanted was for the guy to listen to it and hear it, you know what I mean? And he obviously heard it. So,
yeah,
that was big for me. That was real big for me.
Yeah. Hey, Don, if I'm not mistaken, I think Primo used that three times. He used it twice, two songs on Afu Ra's album, and then
he used it for MOP, and it was for the Blade soundtrack, and he used it once for Afu Ra, as far as I know. I don't know if he used it the third time.
twice, dude.
Twice for Afro Rock?
Yeah, twice for Afro Rock.
Okay,
yeah.
I don't know.
What I know.
Second, I never heard the second song.
Yeah. When I heard my voice, I was like, ah, let me go buy this record. And
nice.
I picked it up, and I was like, oh shit. And as I started going through it, I was like, oh shit, he used it in another song. Oh crap, that's crazy. Yeah,
that's fucked up. You're gonna have to send me the link to that when you remember, if you remember.
Yeah,
and I want to check
man.
That out. Well,
yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, man, that was done.
Plus, it also helps that I was working in the same studio as Primo for like maybe a half a year too. That kind of helped as well. Yeah, I was an intern at D&B for a little bit, so that was a blast.
Word.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a fun record right there, man. Super fun
yeah.
record.
Yeah, it was, man. Yeah, my first time recording in a real studio, you know, getting shit on wax. And yeah, the experience, that was awesome, man. Just having your actual a record in your hand that you did, you know.
Right. Well, yeah, you guys did an album, or was just that one that track?
Oh
no,
Don's done several albums already at this point. That was just the one for me.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean don't phrase it the wrong way. You got a couple of joints out. You know what I'm saying? Actually recorded a couple of joints. You got
yeah.
a joint on my first solo full length release. You
yeah.
got a joint on that one, the Formulate joint, which was pretty dope. I'm still feeling that joint to this day.
Yeah.
Right
on. Yeah. But Shock definitely, he has several albums already out, so he's definitely well versed in the music.
Matter of
sure.
fact, I got a single dropping tomorrow morning, matter of fact.
Yeah.
We still doing this, guys.
I know.
You said
you were still doing music. So I seen you were promoting. You're doing something with that track. I mean, who's that girl? Who's that girl you're working with?
Right now, I'm working on two separate albums actually. Right now, producing two separate albums. One for this group I'm in called Five Star, and that's with this very talented Grammy nominated songwriter / rapper. His name is Genesee. And I'm also working on another project for a solo female artist named Kate La D. Shout outs Kate La D and Genesee, word up. But from Noble House. But yeah, I'm working on those two projects, trying to wrap those two projects up right now. And the single that I'm dropping right now is off Kate La D's album that we're anticipating maybe next month in June, hopefully.
Nice.
If everything goes right. Word.
Nice.
But yeah, we've been working hard. We've been up. Matter of fact, I'm like on an hour and a half of sleep because I pulled an all-nighter studio session last night. And I barely just got to sleep an hour and a half before I got woken up by this guy over here. Fucking Rule One. Wake-up calls and shit.
Yeah,
totally
man.
Forgot about the whole podcast thing, man. Word. So, yeah, man. Still working hella hard. Still working mad hard on this shit, man.
Alex, you're still right. You're still... Getting up, I see. Get a Gang, right? You're down with Get a Gang?
Yeah, man. Yeah, Get a Gang is started by Baez One from YNN. And I met Baez through this crew that I was in, VSOP, several years ago. And as the crew sort of, I don't know if it really dissolved, but a lot of people started, I guess, leaving or something to that effect. And many people just kind of went their separate ways. And Baez was like, yo, Rule, I'm starting something new. I want you in. It's called Get a Gang. And I was like, yeah, hell yeah, bro. You're a homie and I love your style. So yeah, this definitely, you know, put me down for Get a Gang for sure.
Nice.
These are like, you know, the thing is about Get a Gang and like WOD is, you know, I don't like to, like when I was bringing back WOD, it just kind of made sense to me. You know, it has a legacy back in Frisco, and then WOD, you know, after the late 80s, WOD, I guess they, you know, formed it into another crew. It kind of faded into another crew. I'm not really sure. But I always remember WOD as a young kid and seeing WOD up, Slink WOD. I think I already mentioned Twicko was in WOD at some point as well.
Yeah.
So I just remember seeing all WOD up around San Francisco very early on. So when I said, yo, you know, we're bringing back WOD, I'd like you in. I'm like, yeah, hell yeah, bro. Of course. It makes total sense. So that's a legacy I can get behind for sure. Get a Gang is like, it's something new and, something that Bias created. There's no a background legacy that I've never been involved with or I don't know nothing about or never been a part of. So this, for me, this was very organic. And I was like, yeah, for sure, dude. If it's your crew and, you know, it doesn't have a backstory from like 20 years ago or some other shit with a whole bunch of separate other, you know, characters that were in it before, absolutely. Put me down for sure.
Nice.
But yeah, that's pretty much the origins of that.
Yeah, Don's and Riders of Doom too. Well, how was that when Eyes was reaching out to you?
Man, I mean, I was honored, to be quite honest with you. I mean, you know, we had basically Eyes reached out and asked me if I wanted to be down with San Francisco's most legendary crews, you know, with a lot of history behind it. Yeah. How could I deny anything like that? You know what I mean? How could I? You know, so it's an honor, to be quite honest with you. It's just an honor. And that's like the best way I can phrase it or put it.
Yeah, and you know, WOD, I mean, you know, to put, like, Mace is bringing up a lot of writers. You know, I'm glad that he's, like, schooling these writers and, you know, producing all these dope writers, because we need more of those instead of the, you know, the scribble guys on the bus, you know?
Word.
Yeah. Word. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I know, I just want to touch on Piece by Piece. How do you guys feel about that?
That video.
Yeah,
oh,
that video.
Do you really want to know?
in a nutshell, yeah.
Fuckery. Anyway, moving forward. Fuckery. Yeah. Fuckery.
Wait, are we talking about the same documentary?
Yeah, the documentary.
Dude, I thought it was dope. I thought it was pretty dope.
Yeah.
It kind of skated over the 80s a little bit, but, you know, it told a story that, you know, many Frisco writers didn't get to see throughout our graffiti career. It was all good to me, man. It kind of grazed though, you know, really, SCP didn't get much shine. I mean, I think one or two of us had a piece in there. You know, for a quick moment, you know, but you know, I'm not holding anything, any resentment or anything. It is what it is. Don, you don't feel the same?
Here's my thing: if you're going to document the history of San Francisco graffiti, document the fucking whole history. Don't pick and choose the parts you like and leave out the history of it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, I'm gonna leave it right there, man.
Well,
you'll leave it right there.
I think they reached out to not me or you. I think they reached out to somebody that was in SCP at some point, and I think they denied the request, from my understanding. So it could be something to that effect. When the documentary was being made, I had no one reached out to me to.
Well, here's the thing. If you talk to the wrong people, you're not going to get the results you need.
Yeah.
So, anyway,
yeah,
whoever was in charge of that, you failed. Anyways.
Tell them how you really feel.
I can't be told nothing. I think that shit was fuckery, but anyway, that's just my opinion. For whatever it's worth, which probably ain't much, but whatever, I don't care.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think they did just glaze over the 80s. I think a lot was too much on LA writers.
I think whoever made that film, like I said, they picked and chose whoever they wanted to put in and whoever they wanted to highlight, and they left out a lot of important shit. You know what I mean? But whatever, that's my opinion, and I'm pretty much over that whole shit. You know what I mean? But
no,
since you asked.
No, well, you know, it's funny because, you know, a lot of people who have done graffiti podcasts or talked about stuff have very much left a lot of guys out, you know? And that's why I wanted to start this podcast, you know, so people have a voice and wanted to talk about their history with the San Francisco graffiti in the 80s.
Yeah.
Word.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's all good, bro. Yeah, it was. I thought it was a well put together documentary. You know, did they skate over a lot of things? Sure, of course. If you look at Star Wars, you know, I'm sure a lot of writers felt like, hey man, what about me? You know, and then later on, many years later,
Here's the thing, man. If you're gonna make a doc about SF Graffiti and you're gonna focus on about other writers that ain't from San Francisco, you're fucking up. You dig what I'm saying? Like, yeah. There's a bunch of writers in that film that weren't even from Frisco, claiming Frisco, and it's like, dude, where the fuck were you back then when I was a kid? I never even heard of you. But you're all up in this film, bragging and boasting about how you put it down and how you're a Frisco writer. Dude, where are you from again? You know, you're not from this town, because if you was from this town, I'd know you. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not complicated, guys. It's really not that complicated.
Yeah. Maybe there needs to be another documentary that is more focused on and maybe focusing on, the early 80s. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, I think the beginnings of the early 80s is what everybody wants to hear about. You know, it's the 90s, the late 90s. Were great and all, but I think for the most part, nobody really touches on the 80s, the early 80s.
Yeah. Well, if it wasn't for the 80s, it wouldn't be the 90s. That's all I really got to say about that one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it was a straight-up progression. So if it wasn't for the kids that were getting down in the 80s, laying down the footprints and all that shit and the foundation for all this shit, you know what I mean? Just like in any other city, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
this city is no different when it comes to stuff like that. This city is no different, man. So, yeah.
So I feel like there's going to be a part two of this, because I'm going to wrap it up now.
Okay, has it been that long already? Jeez.
Yeah, no. I mean, you know, there's a lot of information that I want. You know, that like, there's not enough time. You know what I mean?
Dig it. Yeah.
So
yeah, we didn't get to touch on SCP too much, man, either. That's another thing.
Yeah, yeah. How about some shout-outs? You guys got any shout-outs?
Go for it, Al. Just want to shout-out my wife and my family, my five kids. I want to give a shout-out to all my WOD brothers. Get it going for sure. Yeah, and all the old Frisco heads from the 80s for sure, man. Peace.
Yo, Don?
Word up. Yo, big shout-outs to all the old-school heads that put it down, man, all the heads that influenced me from back in the day. Shit. Big shout-out to Mace, WOD. Big shout-out to L-Rock. Shout-out to my Noble House family. Shout-out to Genstar, Kate LaVie. I know I'm forgetting hella people. Shout outs to Oz, WOD crew president. Shout outs to Big Grandmaster Sai 135. Word up. You know what I mean? Anybody else I forgot? I still love you. Word up.
Right on.
Yeah, man. Extended WOD family, TMS, all those other guys out there that are just, you know, well, that are all in the big family. Definitely.
Right on, right on. So we're going to wrap it up. You guys got an Instagram or whatever?
Yeah, I do, actually. At @shockone, SHOKWUN. And then my secondary account is Download Legendary, DONLO, Legendary. That's my music page and shit. So anybody wants to dip in and... for like music updates and shit, that's what I try to advertise on both my accounts, honestly. I know all the graffiti guys are sick of me seeing me post fucking music advertisements on my graffiti page, because that's not what they go there to look. But hey, you're stuck with me. Either that or you're gonna follow me or whatever, you know, whatever's clever, guys.
Cool.
But yeah, those are my Instagram handles.
All right, Alex.
Yeah, Rule One, RUELONE, and Instagram. That's pretty much it.
All right, man. We guys, we're out, man. Peace.
All right, guys. Word, thanks for having us, yo.
Thank you, man.